morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, Valentine's Day, the 14th of February. An article a couple weeks ago in the New York Times we found very interesting, and it concerns boys and school. And the author of the piece noted a study that came out recently in the Journal of Human Resources that shows that boys score as well or even better than girls on standardized tests, but they don't get grades that are nearly as good. They don't take advanced classes or attend college in nearly as high the number as girls. The scholars attributed these differences to differences in non-cognitive skills, attentiveness, persistence, eagerness to learn, the ability to sit still and work independently. This hour, Christina Hoff Summers will be joining us to talk about boys and what it is we can do to help boys and how schools may want to respond to these differences in non-cognitive skills. Christina Hoff Summers is formerly a philosophy professor who taught ethics and is known for her critique of late 20th century feminism. She is the author of The War Against Boys. She is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. I think we'll probably have a lot of phone calls concerning this issue. So let me give you our phone number and other ways to communicate with us so you can tell us what you think. Would you agree? What can we do to help boys, I guess, is the question of the hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Christina, hello. Happy Valentine's Day, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
The statistics, when you look at them, are pretty remarkable in terms of the number of girls who are in college now, in terms of the grades that they're getting. It is a time for girls to flourish in America, but when you look at what's happening to boys, you realize we haven't paid a whole lot of attention to boys really being behind.
That's exactly right. And we are seeing a college gap favoring girls turning into a chasm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's across all ethnic lines and racial groups. The girls are academically stronger than boys. And it's really time to pay attention to this problem, but it seems that there just aren't the organizations, the Department of Education, the various education lobby groups, they really haven't taken up the cause of boys, and I'm hoping to turn that around.
Yes, well, I think we're on our way with what you've done here. Is part of this, does it start very early with good behavior? I just came across my first grade report card, actually, from Miss Foley many, many, many years ago, and she commented on what a good girl I was, how well-behaved I was. She used that phrase, and attentive, et cetera. Is behavior the factor that really works in school on the behalf of girls?
Yes, and these researchers, these were three economists, two at the University of Georgia and one at Columbia University. They had this wonderful data set. The Department of Education had studied, I think, about 17,000 kids and given them tests to see their mastery of math and science and reading. Then they independently asked the teachers to evaluate the child's proficiency. And then the teachers also evaluated their comportment. And they were able to show that the boys, as you mentioned before, they tested as well or better than the girls in most subjects, but their grades were far lower. And the teacher was grading them on their mastery. The grades for comportment were different, but it was clear they factored in behavior. Can the child sit still? Is the child attentive, cooperative? Now, thing is, as early as kindergarten, boys suffer from their behavior. Now, many people will say, well, of course they would suffer for that. They have to learn to behave.
Right.
I don't disagree. But if we're talking about 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, we all know that boys, on average, we're not talking about every little boy and every little girl, but just typically, it's harder for a boy to sit still. It's harder for a boy to take direction. And I look at what we did for girls. We saw the girls were falling behind in math and science, and there was a massive effort to strengthen girls. And it's worked. We actually turned things around. And I suggest we do that for boys.
You talk about boy-verse trends in your article, the decline of recess, zero-tolerance disciplinary policies, the tendency to criminalize minor juvenile misconduct, and the turn away from single-sex schooling. If you looked at all the boys in America who are in school right now, would most of them benefit? In other words, are most of them exhibiting behaviors that they need recess because they want to run, they get in trouble with the principal because of activities that they've done? I guess I'm asking, does this include most boys, 50% of boys, 60% of boys? How do we know?
Well, again, there are always exceptions, but I'm talking about the rules. And as a rule, boys are more likely to be in trouble. And this begins, we even see it with toddlers. The boys are running around more and more likely to be injured. There's a high-spiritedness and rambunctiousness. And girls display this too, but not to the same degree. And so I would say as many as 70 or 80% of little boys find it a challenge to settle down in school and to take direction. We have very good data from the Department of Education that girls are what they call engaged, academically engaged. They come to school more prepared to learn, more eager to learn, and wanting to please the teacher. This is not the typical attitude of little boys. We have to find a way to encourage those behaviors, but teachers have to learn in schools of education, for example, that it's more of a challenge to educate a little boy than a little girl.
And was part of the problem that we wanted to think, at least for some decades, fairly recently, that there weren't that many differences between boys and girls?
Exactly. This is a sort of dogma. Mm-hmm. In gender studies, we're told that gender is a social construction, and of course it's partly true, but there's also a biological basis for behavior, and boys and girls are different. And if you, I remember an experiment that was carried out by Hasbro Toys. They wanted to produce a kind of playhouse, dollhouse for boys and girls, and they brought the children into their fun lab in Providence, Rhode Island, and the girls played constructively with the house. They put the baby doll in the baby carriage and played, and the boys came in and looked at the situation, and one after the other, they would choose to catapult the baby carriage from the roof.
Oh, no.
And the Hasbro educator, it was a psychologist, I guess, she said, oh, my goodness, they really are different. Well, if you are a kindergarten teacher or preschool teacher, there will be a fair amount of catapulting, and it's just the way they seem to be wired. And I say work with it. And I'll give a precise example. There was a wonderful study from two professors, one from the University of Denver and the other from, I think, Wheaton College. And they looked at children's, and these were preschool and kindergarten children's narratives. And a lot of girls will have wonderful sort of theatrical narratives. They'll play house, they play school. And the boys like superheroes, action. And there's a lot of rough and tumble, imaginary fighting and conquest and so forth. And what they found is the teachers don't approve of this imaginative play, the superhero, bad guy play, they called it. And they wondered if by making boys sort of ashamed of their preferred play fantasies, if we're not even inhibiting their ability to tell stories, their interest in fiction, that at a very early age, boys are made to feel bad about themselves.
I was interested in this trip you took, and I want you to talk about this school. I have a hard time imagining a whole lot of schools following this model, but it was interesting. It made me think, well, really, is this the way to go for boys? The aviation program that you visited, you observed a classroom of 14 and 15-year-olds. Can you talk about that?
Yes. Again, what I describe here, as with single-sex schools and every other suggestion, they're not the solution for all kids,
right,
but they're an important part of a solution. And one reason we know this is this problem with male underachievement has been studied for more than 10 years by the British, by the Australians, by the Canadians, so we can see what's worked for them. Mm-hmm. And one idea, and I went and saw a school in Queens, New York, called Aviation High School. And it is a school where the students, it's a a high school. It begins in ninth grade. And they spend half a day on academic subjects, and there are honor courses, and many of the kids, a high percentage, go on to college. But they also spend half a day, these are kids who are interested in aviation. And so they learn about aerodynamics, and they take a lot of science courses, but they also can tinker on an airplane that's parked out in the playground. And these are kids drawn from poor homes around New York City, many, many children of color. It's 86% boys. There are girls there, but more boys than girls seem to be drawn to Aviation High. And I went to that school. I was amazed, first of all, how quiet it was.
Really?
You walk through the doors and you think it's a holiday. Where are the kids? They're in the classroom. And these children weren't simply engaged. They were enthralled. And again, 15, 16-year-olds working so hard, learning all sorts of, one of the things I noticed is how much emphasis the teachers put on organization, following directions, being, doing things systematically. This is so important for little boys who struggle so much, and young men who struggle so much with just basic organization. Anyway, they were doing everything right. Again, not the answer for all kids, but I think that we should look at aviation, and there's a wonderful collection of schools, vocational schools in Massachusetts, and one think tank called them the Cadillac of vocation and tech education, because they're doing such a fine job. I mean, there was a time where these schools were, I don't know, in the 50s and 60s, sort of dumping grounds for students no one wanted to bother with. Well, that has turned around, and now they're sort of cutting edge, and they're career-focused schools.
Christina, you mentioned that the Canadians, the British, and I think you said the Australians have been doing studies on this, and you say that there are things that we could learn from them. What have you learned?
Well, for example, the British, at the level of the Parliament, they're addressing what they call the boy crisis. And now why are the British and the Australian and their governments so engaged with this problem? Because they see boy failure not only as a misfortune for boys, which of course they would care about, but they're also worried about their economic future. If you do not have an educated workforce, if you have like half your population or a high percentage of young men who are academically disengaged, barely literate, how are they going to make it in an information economy? I mean, almost any job that one gets these days requires technical skills and high levels of literacy. And so students need education at least a year or two beyond high school. And girls are getting it and boys are not. So the British and the Australians, the Canadians, are trying to figure out why. And so in Britain, for example, they're putting massive effort into improving male literacy. And they even have they're asking teachers in schools of education to become experts in books that work for boys, books that boys will read. They're not identical to the materials that girls read. And they found out the teachers didn't know this, and so they're making it a priority to kind of raise awareness about how to get a young man to read.
Hmm. Well, I'm thinking about all of the years. We're marking the 50th anniversary, as you know, of the Feminine Mystique. We did a show on this a couple days ago, and I'm thinking about all the women who were kept out of the workforce or underutilized for such a long period of time. Well, who used to be in charge? The boys, for years and years. Weren't they competent?
Well, I think a lot of people, when they first hear about the concerns for boys, there are probably some who roll their eyes and think, okay,
right.
For so long men were in charge. Now girls and women are moving a little bit ahead, and suddenly there's panic about boys. Well, the way I look at it, I became a feminist in college. I did not appreciate male chauvinism. I still do not. But the answer to chauvinism is not to reverse it and practice it against the other sex. It's to practice it against males. It's basic fairness. And that's what I think most feminists want, is an equal opportunity, not special advantages for women. Men once enjoyed. We want, as I say, a level playing field. And to level the playing field, I think we saw that with girls, we needed extra special interventions, particularly in math and science. With boys, we need these special interventions in many areas, particularly literacy, but also school engagement. We have to find ways. We're just doing a better job educating girls than boys right now, and I don't see the solution. And here's the other thing. If you say, well, who cares about the boys? It's girls' turn. The fact is our daughters will have to create a future with these young men.
Sure.
If we're going to have these big gaps in education, which we do, and as I said, it across all ethnic groups now, the young women are more educated, this is going to create a lot of social chaos. Mm-hmm. So you're not helping women by ignoring the educational needs of men.
Christina Hoff Summers is our guest this hour. I don't know if you saw this article in the New York Times. It was on, let me look at the date, February 2nd, The Boys at the Back. Why is it that boys are just not doing very well in school? They may test just as well as girls, but when it comes to going to college, when it comes to being able to really study something, to be attentive, to be persistent, to be eager to learn, to sit still, work independently, that we have a problem with boys right now. And fascinatingly, there are countries, Christina mentioned them, who are studying this, who are very concerned about this, and maybe we can learn from them. Have you found this to be true? What can we do to help boys? Do we need to help boys? Our phone lines are filled, so keep the number in your mind, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two on this Valentine's Day, Chip Duncan, Milwaukee filmmaker, and Tracy Dorsey, producer of The Reagan Presidency. That's Chip's latest effort. It's a three-part series on the Reagan presidency that is airing this month all over the country on PBS. All right, two phone calls. Mike in Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay, I have a comment which may be of interest. I have two boys, separated by your age. One was able to obtain a full scholarship from a great university, and in addition, he was able to also get the ROTC scholarship. The other one is really not that interested in school. If I had to gauge them, you know, level of intelligence, to me, they're basically the same as far as vocabulary, social skills, things of that nature. One is just more inclined to it than the other. I ask the question, you know, why? And perhaps the answer ties into a comment that your guest made about this aviation school. The boy that was able to achieve all of these things participated in a program since a very early age called the Navy Sea Cadets. And it was a monthly thing, and during the summer they would go and visit naval bases, and there was a lot of engineering and things of that nature, which seems to spark his interest. The other boy really wasn't that interested in it. Perhaps that's the answer to the question.
Christina.
Well, you see, that a program like that, that you describe your son going to, it for so many boys, it will just capture their imagination, and they will begin to work hard because they can see themselves. They have goals, and they have something that intrigues them. With the other son, not all kids are the same. And my two sons were rambunctious little boys, but both became English majors.
Oh, so did they?
I begged them not to. It's so impractical, but they did. So I certainly know that kids are, you know, they're not all the same. But for the average little boy, you need to. Well, here's the thing I would say. It's bad to exaggerate the differences between the sexes and assert that there are differences where there are none. That's harmful to kids. That's stereotyping, and it just can be completely create all sorts of obstacles. However, if you do not acknowledge that there's differences where they are there, you can also harm children. And so what I'm saying is that we should consider these differences, and that for most boys, not all, if you could change the curriculum and find ways, as they did for your son, for Mike's son, that kind of program with the SEALs, I mean, that's fantastic. That was fantastic for your son. Mm-hmm. The other boy, I don't know. It's always a mystery with why one child is so interested in that program and another isn't, but I'd have to know more about his interests, I guess.
Thanks, Mike, for the call. Well, this is interesting. You have two, you call them rambunctious sons. They both became English majors. What about this, to have a good life, it's probably a good idea to know literature, to read literature, to know Shakespeare, to, isn't there a concern if we go to aviation schools, if we go to programs like Mike mentioned, that we preclude the possibility of becoming an English major, that we preclude the possibility of really learning to love the language, of learning to spend our time reading and learning all we can about the world?
Right, and that's one thing I love about aviation and these technological high schools in Massachusetts is that they give the students a solid grounding in the humanities. And it's a grounding they might not have been just open to if they were in another school, because they, unless they do well in their English classes, they can't work on the airplane parked in the parking lot. So they are motivated. And a lot of young men, they have to have sort of practical reasons to do something. Then along the way, they may discover, yes, I want to be an English major. And that happens at aviation. I asked the principal, I said, do they all become pilots and engineers or an airplane maker? He said, no, we end up, you know, they go to all sorts of different colleges, and there are some English majors among them. So that can happen, especially if you have a great teacher. That's another thing.
Yes.
Is a teacher can,
yes.
That's what happened to my sons. They just happened to, their best teachers were their English teachers, and they were excited about that subject. So a great teacher can change the mind of a boy. But again, it's not as if we're looking at, you know, we're losing too many boys who aren't becoming English majors. We're losing vast numbers of boys who are barely literate. And you have huge numbers of young men who are, just to give one statistic from the U.S. Department of Education, the average 17-year-old boy has the writing skills of a 15-year-old girl. They're 2 years behind in writing and about a year and a half behind in reading. And then if you look at the at UCLA, they do a freshman, they do a survey of college freshmen and find that very few men, young men, read for pleasure. It's something that's done largely by women.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be that way if we had a specialty in schools of education on male literacy, then we would have more male English majors. And that's another reason for single-sex schools, is people think, oh, well, these schools reinforce stereotypes. Well, we've got some good studies to suggest actually the opposite is true. In those schools, the kids can't really separate and give, you know, the girls' job is to do the newspaper and the boys' job is to be on the football team. At those schools, everybody has to do everything. So the boys have to be the journalists and they have to be in the plays and that so forth. And they become better, sort of more well-rounded.
You mentioned a great teacher. I'm with you on that. That's just so important. But I'm also thinking, just this is from terms of our family experience, that a great male teacher is very important to a young boy.
Absolutely. And if you think of how many boys come from broken homes,
yes,
which typically means the father, no father, or fairly limited time with the father. And then you go to our elementary schools, which I think the last time I looked, something like 84 or 85% of the teachers are women. It's not that high in high school, but it's still more women than men. So they begin, I think they do think of education as just, you know, the teachers kind of, they project their as their mother, and it's mostly women. And then the fact that our schools have become so, as I call it, male averse, I think a lot of boys just feel this is not the place for them. They don't belong there. And with male teachers, that changes things a lot. And again, we're beginning to get some good research. I think it's Thomas Dees at Swarthmore showed that boys do better with male teachers and girls do better with female teachers.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Tom in Stoddard. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. Yes, I wanted to point out the book, The Wonder of Boys, by Michael Gurian. Michael is a therapist and has the Gurian Institute. I believe that's the GurianInstitute.org. And Michael's website is michael-gurian.com. His book shows how the boy's brain at rest has a lot more activity. A brain scan shows a lot more activity with the student at rest, whereas a girl's brain scan shows much more area of no activity. And he points out that boys just learn in a classroom where they are allowed to get up and move around. A typical teacher who expects a classroom and to be in very good order expects everybody to be in their seat and everybody to have everything organized in a very traditional fashion. Mm-hmm. But in a classroom where students are able to get up and move around and move from project to project, table to table, that there's a lot more activity and learning going on.
Christina.
Yes, I'm a friend with Michael Gurian and a great admirer. He's got full of ideas on what teachers can do, and I do encourage people to go to his website. Michael's a little more optimistic about what we can learn from brain scans. I'm still a bit of a skeptic, but it, just his know-how about how to reach out to boys, and he has wonderful ideas on books to use and activities, and he's a great speaker. I would encourage educators to become acquainted with his work.
Thanks, Tom, for the call. Karen in Milwaukee, hi.
I just want to thank you, Kathleen, for having this show on. I just have to say this just speaks to my heart so fully about the experience I went through with my son. And he's older now, but I felt like I was constantly fighting the school system because of what I saw as basically reverse discrimination against the boys in the class. And at that time, I saw that it, you know, like you said, it's basically all women teaching boys. And especially also, you know, if a lot of boys are coming from single parent homes, maybe there's no even male around. So I mean, there were things that happened from very early on with, you know, boys being very active. My son would like to, you know, do karate, pretend karate with other boys in the hallway. Well, you know, that was not
okay. You can't not do even, that. Right.
Not even, you know, on their own time, you know, They were shamed out of it. But the one incident that particularly stands out in a school, north of Milwaukee, was when he was in third grade and the boys would, you know, love to play during the wintertime, would love to play, have snowball fights, of course, not allowed. But if they even tried, they were put what they termed put on the wall with their noses facing the wall, totally shamed for wanting to do something like this. And I felt, and it was, you know, these women in the school, I know there's some, you know, good women teachers, but the women in the school were like ultra feminist, and I felt like they had a real thing against boys, and they were punishing them for, you know, maybe years of discrimination with girls. But I agree with the single sex schools, just everything you've said.
All right, Christina.
Oh, I feel such sympathy as a mother of sons. It's schools are just not tailored to their needs. You talk about their, I mean, many parents don't realize how far they've cut back recess. And even when they do allow recess, it's often highly managed. I read about schools where they've changed tug of war to tug of peace. And they have the game tag is no longer recommended. They replaced it in one area, a school district, with circle of friends where no one is ever out. And the kids just, the boys, what they tend to want to do is that sort of active, raucous, rough and tumble play. They need that. It's part of their healthy development. It's children, male children, evince this behavior in every culture we've ever studied. Girls like rough and tumble play. Boys like it and need it a lot more. And we're not allowing it. And it sounds to me as though the callers Karen was describing that with her son.
And yet, when you think about it, you've been inside schools. I've taught school years ago. If you have 30 kids or 35 kids in a classroom and you're trying to manage all of them, they all have different skills, they all have different interests, that you do have to keep a measure of order, right? To defend teachers here, they have to keep things so that everybody can learn. It could easily descend into chaos.
Absolutely, and that's the argument for frequent recess, and just letting them go out and run around. And I mean, some people say the reason we have so many prescriptions for Ritalin is because the boys are just not allowed to go out and sort of spend a lot of energy and then come back and calm down to learn. But even in the classroom, the little boys, you know, there might be just things teachers can do to let them move around a bit. If they have to sit for a long time, then just let them do some stretches. But other things work, too, in a classroom to keep a boy's attention. Again, these are techniques that are evolving out of the British and the Canadian models, but teachers to use a lot of humor, have surprise in the classroom. The British, some headmasters had a meeting and said, you need a class where the boys never know where the teacher's going to be. She can suddenly be at his desk. You know, there's a little suspense. And they just have just some ideas. And again, I don't want to do anything that would be harmful to girls, but it just seemed to me if a teacher was aware that there were these two modes, I think it would help boys and girls. And then the boys and girls who defy the stereotype, and they're girls more like boys more like girls, it would help them too. I don't see teachers being trained in this kind of pedagogy. They're still in our schools of education. They're likely to learn that girls are shortchanged in our classroom because this was a powerful movement in the 90s. And last time I checked, this was still being promoted in schools of education. And I think we need to move on. And again, not to stop doing anything that was helpful to the girls. It's wonderfully gratifying to see how well girls are doing. But we have to think about the boys as well.
Thanks, Karen, for the call. Robbie in Darlington, hi.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having this program. I'm a father that raised a son during the 90s and the early 2000s, and the gold standard was guilt and Ritalin. That's what they put upon our boys, and I had to fight vigorously to combat that. My son has grown into a fine young man, but I've seen the results of those effects upon his friends and his generation, men that these boys that have grown into men nowadays, they don't have much drive. They don't do much of anything. The women and their lives are doing everything for them. And it's a sad ending to a thought process that was forced upon the young boys of our nation during this period of time.
Christina.
Yes, I think there are a number of colleges now where the administrators are worried that the males are going to disappear altogether, especially small liberal arts colleges approaching 60-70% female. Where are the males? We're facing a generation of educated young women who are going to have to marry men who are considerably less educated than themselves, if these men will marry at all. Because if a young man cannot make a future for himself economically, which means being educated, it's just, I don't want to say impossible, but almost impossible to make it into the middle class without an education beyond high school. And girls are getting it in far more than boys. So if the boys don't have it, will they be able to form families? Will they be able to be husbands and fathers and effective in those roles? That's a big question, and that's why the British, and I keep mentioning the Canadians and the Australians, that's why they are attending to this problem and have so much, putting so many resources into it. We are not doing that. In the United States, for example, there's a White House Council on Women and Girls. Some men's groups have suggested they have a council on boys and men. There are huge issues with men's health and men's education. Where are the organizations? Where's the activism? We don't have it. These other countries do.
We've had several callers, though, and you included, who talked about your boys as being rambunctious. They are fine young men now. They were English majors. Several callers have said they had problems with their children, boys, when they were in school, but they've turned out to be fine young men. Everybody's used this phrase, fine young men. So my question is, how did that happen? How did they all become fine young men?
Well, I think kids are resilient, and but I think we might be embracing a false optimism if we think there was a time where, you know, a boy, let's say he was just a C-minus D student, he wasn't going to make it. Everyone kind of knew if he liked to tinker with cars, or, you know, he was interested in construction and so forth, he could just go out and get a good job in manufacturing and construction. Those jobs are disappearing. And our economy is increasingly, an individual's fate in the economy, and the economy itself depends on an educated workforce. And almost any job, as I said, you need math and literacy skills. So it's these fine young men, you're going to find more of them lost and not able, as I said, not able to form families. And, I mean, we have a large and growing cohort of minimally educated young men who are going to find a very hard place, you know, finding a place for themselves in society.
Right. Well, that's sad, isn't it?
It's sad, and it's so unnecessary. I'll just give a quick example of two boys that I know who were raised in Maine, and they were always in trouble. They hated school. I guess they did graduate from high school, and they went out to Montana, working on a ranch or something. And then one of the boys entered a contest, he was playing poker, and he won a trip to Antarctica, which was huge. He took his dad. They went to Antarctica. And I said to his mom, I said, oh, my goodness, you know, it's not easy to play poker. That takes mathematical skills to win at that level. He was playing all these doctors and people. And she said, oh, no, he's always been mathematically gifted and great at these games and so forth. Why didn't someone notice that in high school?
Right.
Why wasn't he drawn into a science club? Or, you know, and she told me that at that time in Maine, all the programs were for girls, and he was just seen as a troublemaker. And I look at him, and I see just hundreds of thousands of young men whom we're not reaching. And we lose their talent. I mean, it's nice that he plays poker so brilliantly. But those skills,
right.
And, you know, we all know boys like this. They do certain things so brilliantly. And if only our classrooms were able somehow to harness that ability and that intensity. And it just, you know, as you said before, it means acknowledging the difference between boys and girls.
Christina Hoffsummer is our guest this hour, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, the author of The War Against Boys, and we're talking about the boys at the back, which indeed they appear to be when it comes to schools, when it comes to colleges, and we're talking about why and what we can do to help boys succeed. Thank you, Robbie, for your call. One line is open, 800-486-8655 is our number. Our email, we have a couple of those I'll get to you, I promise, in a moment. talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next hour of the program, Milwaukee documentary filmmaker Chip Duncan on his latest three-part series on the Reagan presidency. We have all kinds of emails. You really are on a topic that is generating a lot of response. Christina, let me go to a couple of those and respond if you will. Jeannie on Facebook writes, young boys are spending way too much time playing video games and not reading books, not exploring the world around them, not developing socially. They are falling behind. Aaron writes, society's gender roles are semi-responsible for the different behaviors of boys and girls. When schools and workforces are evolving to favor new traits, it does not seem logical to force a backward trend, a transition to reinforce those stereotypical roles.
Interesting point. And what I would say is that sometimes to enlarge a gender role, you have to work with it. You have to start with little boys where they are. If, for example, you want a boy to become a reader and read, you know, great works of literature, well, maybe, first of all, you have to make sure he can read and that it's not a big problem for him. After that, you have to give, let's suppose he likes books about things, you know, he'll read a book called, you know, The Inside of a Nuclear Power Plant, nonfiction rather than a novel. you start with that. Or if he wants to read books about battles or dinosaurs or wizards, you bring him those books that do appeal to the male imagination. And then from that, as he develops the skills, then that's the hope of education, that he'll become more enlightened and all sorts of doors will open. But this idea of just treating children as gender neutral and there's no difference, that is actually reinforcing the worst kinds of stereotypes, because boys just become trapped in their own limitations. So it's a little paradoxical, but I think in order to liberate people and bring them into a larger world, you have to work with them where they are. And for many little boys, there's a lot of boyishness there. Just work with it rather than fight it, deny it, or, heaven forbid, shame them for it.
Mm-hmm. Aaron in Waukesha, hi.
Yeah, hi. I just kind of wanted to offer a counterpoint to this. That, you know, it's being kind of viewed as a problem that we have with boys, and I I think that's a misstatement. I think the problem is we have a cultural problem. And, you know, from my perspective, I would say that, you know, this really can be traced back to... you know, largely when white people's civilization began the wholesale decimation of indigenous and traditional cultures, in which men were classically warriors and hunters, and that, you know, we're trying to fit men into a mold that is very new from a standpoint of, you know, biological history. You know, where we've played a totally different role, and now, you know, there's this expectation within the last, you know, few hundred years or longer in some places, but, you know, where men no longer do those types of things, and now, you know, reading we see, I mean, reading is and literacy is not really inherently important. It's important because of the culture that we've developed.
Christine.
Well, I think that human beings over the centuries have changed, and many men, we've seen previous generations of men who have adapted. When I talk about single-sex schools, for example, I look at the British, and this was a tradition for the upper classes, but they were, through these single-sex schools like Eton and Harrow and so forth, they produced highly literate men, even providing many of the editors of our magazines right now. If you look at young British men that went to these schools, you see the people like Andrew Sullivan and the late Christopher Hitchens and so forth. They had the benefit of that education. So there is a way to make men highly literate and verbal through that. But again, the schools were probably had a lot of competition and hierarchy and humor, and all of that. You bring that to a boy, and you can bring them to high levels of literacy.
Let's talk a little bit about some of these statistics which make you realize that we've got a problem here that you cite in your article, and specifically let's talk about minority young males. The performance of Black, Latino, and lower-income kids, you say, requires particular attention to boys. Black women nearly twice as likely to earn a college degree. At some historically Black colleges, the gap is astounding. Fisk is 64% female, Howard 67%, Clark Atlanta 75%. The Boston Public Schools have found for the graduating class of 2007, 191 Black girls for every 100 boys going on to attend a four-year college or university. Among Hispanics, the ratio was 175 for every 100 boys. I mean, these are astounding statistics, Christina.
I know, and that's why I'm bringing out in late August, I'm bringing out a new edition of The War Against Boys. I wrote the book more than 12 years ago, and it was, I guess, a little before its time, because, first of all, the situation wasn't quite as dire then, and almost no one was paying attention. Well, now people are paying attention because reality has spoken. I mean, if you look at this data, and it's in every state, there are no exceptions. The boys are languishing at the worst possible time, where college or at least an associate of arts degree, something beyond high school, is so critical. And where are the young men? Now, it's most acute among African Americans, but we now see it in Latinos, and we see it in white, among whites.
Yeah. Erin, thanks for the call. Here's an email from Kathleen in New York. I'm very interested in this topic. I'm curious about the influence of competition on the success of boys. I have a son and daughter. My daughter much more motivated to succeed at school. She wants to please her teachers, get good grades. My son loves learning and gets excited about some projects, but doesn't display the same concern for success as my daughter. However, I have noticed that most of the competitive aspects of school, like spelling bees or math games, have been removed. I certainly understand the desire to not make children feel badly if they can't succeed, but I also think competition might motivate boys in a way that make good grades, that good grades do not. I think she's onto something. But that's just from looking at my family. They're all boys, and they love competition. They love competition.
Yes, and I have a great example of that in the new book. It was in West Virginia. The boys were reading at a very low level, and some of the elementary schools and junior high schools experimented with single-sex classrooms, just separating the girls and boys for their English and, their reading and writing classes. And they introduced something called Battle of the Books, and the boys and girls classes would compete. You had to read the book and then answer questions, kind of like Jeopardy or something about these
books.
The boys loved it. They began reading. At one point, they asked for extra books over the summer. And at one point, the seventh grade all-boys reading class beat the eighth grade co-ed class. Now, the sad news is that the ACLU has decided that these programs are sexist and reactionary. They don't want them, and they're getting them shut down. And the way they're doing it is the schools, they threaten lawsuits, and then the school board has to decide whether or not they can spend thousands of dollars fighting off the ACLU, and so these programs are disappearing. Now, these are single-sex programs in our public schools. These were made possible because of then-Senators Hillary Clinton and Kay Bailey Hutchison. They put, as part of the Education Act, the idea that you could experiment with single-sex programs to help kids. So they are legal. But the ACLU is saying they are not. They're trying to get that changed. I hope they don't succeed, and I hope the kids in West Virginia can play battle with the books. Anyway, long-winded way of answering your question. Competition, it's one of the things they're bringing back in the countries I described in Australia and England.
Are they?
Boys like it, yeah.
Anne in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, Kathleen, and hello to your guest. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Oh, I thought I got cut off. Something twice that your guest has stated, but I don't understand. It hasn't been talked about much. If boys are performing as well as girls on tests, why are their grades lower? And I think I've heard an article just mentioned that where boys were performing sometimes better on tests. That isn't part of your conversation, but if they're performing as well and getting graded less well, maybe the problem is somewhere else.
Oh, well, the problem, as best we understand it now from this new study that I talked about in the New York Times article, is that teachers factor in their attitude toward the child. There seems to be some grading bias against boys because of boys' behavior. So they factor in. But let me give an example. It's not exactly what we're talking about, but take something like handwriting. Both my sons have horrible handwriting. A lot of girls have bad handwriting. Mm-hmm. My sons, often they would write something, even they couldn't read it. What did I write? Mom, I can't read it. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Now, there is a very well-known phenomenon of bias against bad handwriting by teachers. They've done experiments. They've given teachers the same essay with good penmanship and one with poor. And the neat paper gets the better grade. So this, now it turns out boys have far worse handwriting than girls, and this is very well documented. And so I would see this with my sons, and people would say, oh, well, now they don't have to write, it's all on computers. It's not. They still have to write their essays in school, in many cases, and for a test anyway. The SAT, there are some kids that get permission to take computers, but many have to write it out longhand, their essay. So this is just an example of a disparate impact. If that a lot of papers are handwritten, it has a disparate impact on boys. And so they will get a lower grade. Now, that's an example of the bad handwriting leading to a lower grade. But they are also just less organized, and they have, you know, their comportment isn't as good. They can't sit still. That gets factored into the grade.
Christina, there is phenomenal interest in this topic. We're just flooded with emails and phone calls, and we'd love to schedule you again as soon as that update to the book comes out.
Oh, I'd love to come back.
Great. Thanks, Christina. Our guest this hour, Christina Hoff Summers. The article that caught our attention is in the February 2nd. What do you call it now? It's not Week in Review anymore. Is it? Or is it? You know what I'm talking about. That section of the New York Times, February 2nd, The Boys at the Back. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this show, Katie Mattson for on-air production.